Is investment something that's always been on your mind, but you don't quite know how to get started on that journey? We are here to set you on the right course. Welcome to My Cashflow Academy's Investor's Corner with your host, Athena Paquette-Cornier. We are all about getting out of the rat race through creating positive passive income through real estate investing. Here you'll hear from regular people just like you and the professionals who support us towards greater wealth. Learn before you earn. Move from analysis to action. And find the right path to attaining the success that you've always dreamed of for yourself. Now, here's your host, Athena.
Okay, welcome to Investor's Corner. This is Athena Paquette-Cormier, and I'm your host and facilitators for these conversations with people who have gotten out of the rat race by creating passive income and don't have to go to work anymore. So they're out of the rat race, and the people that support them. So businesses that help us increase our wealth on our journey towards being out of the rat race. So today I have someone who's both an investor and who is one of those people that's going to help us build our portfolios to have passive income. So today I have Amber Madison Esquire, and not only is he an attorney and has been with us before, but he is also an investor himself. And I think that's one of the critical things to do is find a realtor broker who has the mindset of an investor. So I'm super excited to have Amber here with us today. He's going to talk to us about his creative ways of investing in real estate, but then also the Sacramento, California market and what the opportunities might be there. So welcome again, Amber. I love having Thank people you. Back. Now they really get to know who you are, right?
Happy to be here. I appreciate it.
This and time we have a time. Late, sort of late appointment today because you were out showing property, probably in some pretty miserable heat, huh?
Yeah. Interesting enough, I was showing property in the Oakland, Berkeley area.
So oh, okay.
I have a friend I've known for 19 years. She started living in San Francisco, but she works at Twitter. So she wanted to move east of San Francisco. And so I showed her a lot of houses today.
Wow. How many did you show her? I'm just curious. How many does it take? It's kind of like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of that lollipop? So how many properties did she have to see to kind of get a feel?
Well, since she didn't know anything about Oakland, anything about like Berkeley or the surrounding areas, we've seen about 10 properties already. Today I showed her 4.
Okay.
One new development, 2 homes, and one was a... It was a home that was turned into a condo. So it was.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, Berkeley. Huh. You know, they do things different there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, great. So I think people are very curious about this whole short-term rental space, and you know, the Airbnb, VRBO, vacation rentals. People are afraid to do that because they don't want to turn their vacation home into a party house. And I thought, when we talked the other day, I thought it was fascinating that you and I guess your partner have created this business model of helping executives who are temporarily in the Sacramento area for work to have decent housing instead of a typical like hotel, right?
Exactly. Basically, our competition is an extended stay. So anytime we see an extended stay in Sacramento, we know that's where people want to be or that's where they need to be for work. Mm. So our model is, for the traveling professional, we house them for 30 days or more in the Sacramento region. So we provide fully turnkey housing. When you come to our properties, there's shampoo, there's dish soap, there's basic, you know, kitchen utensils, salt and pepper. If you need to bake, we've got measuring cups. So it's really, you come, you put down your bags, and then, you know, you're at home. So we've been doing that a little over 3.5 years. We're over 6 figures in revenue. Now we've gotten into property development, which has been challenging at times, but also rewarding, you know?
Oh, neat.
To that
short-term rental end, you're doing development with the idea of having that as a short-term rental, or do you mean separately, you're also becoming developers?
Yeah. So it's to be, we bought a property specifically to plug and play into our business model. So it was
That's cool.
Darn near teardown. I mean, inside it was completely a teardown. We still have two more residential units to rehab. You know, we are waiting for permits from the city. We just actually submitted drawings yesterday. But yeah, that's what we're doing.
So are you taking kind of like older homes that are close to where these executive want to be? Is that kind of the property you're targeting for your redevelopment or rehab?
Yeah, this particular property is in the neighborhood of Oak Park. It is Sacramento's oldest subdivision.
Okay.
That is from the 1920s. It's maybe, I used to ride my bike when I lived downtown, so I measured by how long the bike ride is. It's probably a 10-minute bike ride from the Capitol.
That's not bad, right?
It's not bad. So that was Sacramento's original subdivision. So Oak Park, traditionally the homes were like 2-bedroom, 1-bath, you know, really small, but that was what was in back then. Right. This property in particular was a commercial building right, you know, at the cusp of the start of Oak Park. There's a big Oak Park sign not far away. Kevin Johnson, former mayor of Sacramento, his restaurant is a block away. The law school, the Sacramento Law School, it's Pacific Law School, is about, I would say, a 2-minute drive down the street. So it's a pretty decent neighborhood. It's got some challenges as it's becoming redeveloped, but our building is commercial on the bottom level and residential up top. And right now we have tenants who, I believe one tenant is relocating to Sacramento and they needed a place to stay while they found a house.
Uh-huh.
We're all of our units are pet friendly. That's one of our niches. We find that, you know, I'm a pet owner, and generally people that own pets, you know, they have a certain ethos about them, and it's harder for people when they have pets to find landlords who either don't gouge them or either accept the pet, you know.
Right. So, a lot of places probably don't up there either. Like down here, it's people are a little afraid that their property will get destroyed by the pet, right?
Exactly. And we have not found that to be the case. Maybe we're lucky. I don't know. But we are pet friendly. And in that building in particular, we have, I believe, two cats and everything's
fine.
Up. Yeah.
Very cool. So that's interesting. So you're taking like a commercial. Was it commercially zoned or are you having it rezoned or?
Yeah, it's commercially zoned in Sacramento. C2 is what it's zoned here. What it was before was just terrible low income, not even low income. It had just, the previous landlord just took it to shambles. There was a meth lab in there years ago. So we had to do abatement for that, which was expensive, but the shell was there. So we didn't have to move too many walls, you know?
Interesting. Interesting. But, so it is a house. It's just on a commercial lot.
No, it's a commercial building.
Oh, it's a commercial building. Okay.
So it's like a mixed-use building. So, you know, what you would see, you know, in Irvine maybe, where downstairs would be shops and upstairs would be, you know,
okay,
high-end living in Irvine. But in Sacramento, it's, you know, just
not so much.
Just regular. Okay. Yeah, just regular.
Okay. Well, so that's pretty cool. That's a great idea. So you started about 3.5 years ago. What sparked the idea or what? You're just sitting around having a beer going, hey, we should do this. I mean, how did you come up with that?
I did have an aha moment. I was watering the grass at like 10 o'clock at night. I had purchased a duplex maybe a year before that. And I was just trying to figure out how I could scale, you know, rental properties and just doing the math and the down payments. And I was like, I don't think I'm able to scale as quickly as I would like with the traditional method. And my now business partner, at the time he was a mentor, he had an apartment complex not far from the building we own now together. And he, since it's close to the UC Davis Med School, he had always rented to doctors or people working at the hospital. At hospitals, I didn't know this before, a lot of doctors come for a certain amount of time to train, even though they live
in doing their rounds. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had an aha moment. I called him at 10 o'clock at night. I remember he answered the phone and he was like, Ember, why are you calling me right now? You know, I'm in bed. Ow, I got an idea. What you're doing, let's do more. And, you know, let's go to other landlords and see maybe if they're having problems with their units, maybe we can take them over, lease it from them and see if we can do what we want to do with it. And he was like, write me up a business plan. Send it to me and then we'll talk about it.
So like a true mentor, right? Sounds good. Write it up. Let's look at the numbers, right? Yeah, exactly. You're all excited. And he's like, yeah, put it on paper.
Yeah. And that's what we did, you know?
Awesome. So that was 3 years ago. So if I'm hearing you right, you're not buying the properties, you're not owning the properties, you're leasing them from other landlords who just don't want to be bothered or can't seem to find good tenants or whatever their reason for not liking landlording, you're taking that over.
In part, yeah, that's how we started. We have, I want to say, 5 units in the heart of downtown. Downtown Sacramento is a grid. So it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. So we have a number of properties on that grid from a landlord who's owned his apartment since the 80s. Back in the 80s, wow. Downtown Sacramento was not the nicest. So he's right. Really never upgraded. So what we've done with this landlord is say, hey, we'll pay for maybe painting the cabinets or new flooring. We're obviously going to bring a certain clientele in. Give us 3 to 4 units, right? Or
out of an apartment building, out of an entire building. I got it. Okay.
Yeah. And he owns, generally his apartment buildings are between 16 and like, I would say between 12 and 16. So they're not tremendously big apartment complexes, which our clients like. So we built a relationship with him. And because his rent is so low, our delta is profitable and we've been able to save up money. So now the goal is moving forward. And what we have done is add properties that we own.
Okay. So if I heard you right, you exchange doing upgrades in return for having 3 or 4 units, not for free, but you exchange the use of those units for the improvement money. Is that right? Or are you still paying him something or?
No, well, we pay him, his rent is really low. Yeah. Rent for a 1-bedroom is like $900, right? Mm-hmm. And we are leasing them out for $1,975. And parking, it's an additional like $65. So our delta is good. And the upgrades that we're talking about are maybe $2,000, $3,000 at most, right? Mm-hmm. So all furnished and all in, we're talking $5,000 right into the unit. So
is what you invest.
Exactly. So okay. About six months in, we're break even.
Right.
Right. So if we've got a 3-year lease.
So you're doing 3-year leases with the company that's placing these people or with, do you mean the lease?
With the landlord.
Okay. Got it.
With our landlord.
Yeah. So is this what they call a master lease then?
It is what, you know, in legal terms, you would call a master lease.
It's
quite common in a commercial context.
And how typically, how long do your executive people stay? Are they 3-month people, 6-month people? I mean, what's the average or what do you see in your portfolio?
I would say the average for us would be 6 months. We require at least 1 month. I would tell you more times than not, almost always people extend. So initially it started at 3 months. If it's somebody with either a construction company or healthcare, it's generally 3 months, right? Mm. We even had a census person.
Someone went up there for census or they worked for the Census Bureau?
They worked for the census and they were conducting work regarding it. And they had to stay in Sacramento for 3 months, right? And people usually wind up extending. And lately what we're seeing with our single family homes is that it's people moving to Sacramento.
Okay.
And so they
just need a place to land before they find a more permanent home, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they have children, they have pets, et cetera.
Got it. So I had someone email me a question that they couldn't come, but they wanted to ask. So do you put your properties on Airbnb or VRBO or any other platform, or are you creating your own platform and your own name for your business for people to find you?
All of the above. Okay. So what we started like with Facebook, like joining Facebook groups for travelers, extended stays, things of that nature. And we have a virtual assistant who helps us with marketing. Mm-hmm. So my business partner, his name is Al. He's an engineer by trade. I'm an attorney by trade. So Al can build a bridge, you know, if necessary, right?
Yeah.
And I can do anything legally in finance. But neither one of us want to sit in front of a computer every day and do marketing. So
yeah,
we hired
that out. But it is tedious, right? It's tedious work. And I mean, you probably agree with this. It's like the guy who gets $200 or $300 an hour should not be doing the $15 or $10 an hour job, right? I mean, because you're losing money if you do that. Even if you're fascinated with MailChimp and Constant Contact and, you know, all those toys you can play with to make things look nice, you know, it's not really a good use of your time, probably.
Exactly. So she does all of our paperwork. She sends the leases out. She makes sure they're executed, keeps our files in order. We have a bookkeeper as well, but that's really our team. We do use Airbnb. We do use VRBO. We use like Furnish Finder. We use Facebook. We use all of the avenues. Uh-huh. I would say there isn't one way that works the best, right?
Right.
When COVID hit, nobody was using Airbnb, but we had no vacancies. One, because our website, we get good traffic through our website. We have good traffic through Yelp. We have a lot of repeat business. So people, if they've traveled, they'll tell a friend and that friend will contact us. So we've gotten a lot of repeat business over the years. So all of those things have kind of merged.
Yeah. Well, and I guess too, that the people going to your units, to your homes, they're kind of essential. This is not a vacation they're taking. This is not a Canadian flying down to vacation in Sacramento, right? This is not your, your clientele is basically, they are essential probably to, they're going there for a purpose, right? So
exactly.
A business purpose usually.
Yeah. And if you're moving here too, like you've already committed to moving, right?
Right.
Sold your home in the Bay Area. You're coming to Sacramento. You're here.
Right. That plan's not changing, right? So yeah, that's interesting. So you just have the two kind of virtual people. So they're both independent contractors, the people on your team, right? The bookkeeper and the virtual assistant.
Yeah. Our bookkeeper, she actually is located in Sacramento, but
You
know, she doesn't work. We don't have an office for her.
She doesn't go to an office, right? So do you guys have an office or how do you operate your business, just out of your regular offices, or because you're both self-employed, right? So.
Correct. Yeah. I just operate from home. We played with the idea of getting an office in the commercial building, but there would be no reason, right? Like why use the space for that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We use our home offices. Al, he lives in a suburb of Sacramento called Elk Grove. I live in Sacramento proper. And that's where we work out.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you something and it just slipped my mind now. It'll come back to me. So it's been 3 years. So how many, people do you have, how many properties do you have going, or I guess it's not properties, but how many apartments or spaces do you have on your books now?
Now we have 13 units.
Okay.
A mix of properties we own, properties we master lease. 13 units of residential. That commercial building below, there's actual commercial space, so that's not included. That's what we're working with. We're trying to figure out the best way to scale. What I'm finding is that our margins are best on single family homes.
Okay.
So it needs to be at least two bedrooms because that allows clientele who are families to live there and also roommates, so they have their own rooms.
Well, now if they have to work at home, right? I mean,
exactly.
You need two bedrooms if one of the partners is having to work from home.
Yeah. Sorry, did I say two bedrooms? I meant two baths.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Two baths. Yeah, okay, got it.
Yeah, the bath is really the determinative factor here. So if you can find a property, for example, that is a 3-1 and you can add a second bath, by all means, that would be a great.
Yeah, right. And so why did you say the three? Oh, the baths. Okay. But minimum two bedrooms, right? There are 1920s homes that are one bedroom homes, right? That were cottages at one point or whatever. So those probably wouldn't be good for your profile then, right?
It's not ideal. We do have an actual cottage, like you're spot on with that. It was a one bedroom, one bath, but the living room and the bedrooms were on opposite sides of the units.
Okay.
So it was two people that were traveling together and they wanted to cut down their costs.
Uh-huh.
So one person took the living room and was able to just close the door and cut it off.
Yeah.
That's
perfect. So, so back to your team, do they do the interviewing of the tenants? They do the credit checks. They do all of that stuff, right? Or are you guys still doing that yourself?
So Al, that's his specialty, is he does the client management. He's just got the heart of a teacher. He's just the nicest person you'll ever meet.
Oh, so that's neat.
he's really, you know, the marketing. I feel like he's the reason why the marketing goes so well, because he just has a way of talking to people and getting the information about their stay. He gets copies of their proof of employment, their badges, all of that good stuff. He runs their background. Mm-hmm. And once he's done with that, then he'll tell our VA, Joanna, hey, Joanna, this person is approved. Go ahead and get their application out.
Got it. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And so are you marketing to corporations or association, like Traveling Nurses has an association where they, you know, send nurses from Canada or other countries to work 3 months at a time at a certain hospital, whatever. Do you have targeted marketing like that, or how do you find your ideal tenant, I guess?
Right now we target to the end user. So our customer is the person that's going to stay with us. We've tried to market to those type of associations, HR associations.
HR associations, yeah.
But what we found is that they go to an agency, and then the agency is how they place the ultimate end user. Okay. So we haven't been able to establish a relationship with those agencies. I think that would be, you know, the ideal way to go about it. But it's hard to break through that barrier. And thus far, I mean, you just haven't put enough effort into it, frankly.
When I'm just wondering if maybe one of your tenants who already works, let's say for Honda, I don't know if Honda's up there, but, you know, a big corporation, it may turn out that you do a U-turn and they actually refer their HR to you, right? It may end up happening that way because that person has a real experience with you as opposed to just you marketing to the, you know, to the business, to the HR or whoever.
Yeah, definitely that's happened in the healthcare context. We've worked with nurses, for example, and they've loved our stay and they've asked for like a flyer that they can put in the break room, for example. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, and then what about the kind of short-term rental laws? Like some cities are blocking short-term rentals. Some neighborhood associations feel like their neighborhood's being ruined by these Airbnb kind of party houses. So I'm assuming Sacramento doesn't have those laws, but are you at all worried about those things shifting, or do you have in mind what your plan would be if, say, Sacramento all of a sudden said no more short-term rentals? What do you do in that case?
Yeah, so our business model is purposefully 30 days or more because that's what the ordinance requires.
Don't allow overnight or 1 week stays, or that's against the rules there.
Well, if you do that, then it's a different process, and it's a process that we don't want to, you know, that's not our model. We don't want to deal with the turnover once a week, once a day. That's just not what we do. We have our house cleaners, we have our process, and it's a lot easier on the management side when somebody's leaving every 3 or 6. I mean, we have tenants that have stayed 2 years, right? So it's a lot easier on the management side. But it is a concern. It's definitely
a concern.
Especially because Tahoe is not too far from here. And I don't know if you've heard, Tahoe has been having it's been in the press about what they're going to do with their short-term rental ordinance. And we find that, you know, I've done my research about cities in California. Generally, if your stays are over 30 days or more, you won't fall into the short-term rental. Right. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. Nothing wrong at all. It's just for our business model, it doesn't work because of the time we don't want to put into that. Right.
Right. But yeah. It's labor intensive or hours, you know, it's going to drain your time, right? Because there's a lot more coordination. So how did you find your cleaning people? I'm always curious, how do people find, the cleaning people to me, like in regular investing, I say, if you don't have a strong property manager, you're out of luck. You shouldn't even invest, right? But in the short-term rental space, to me, it's like your cleaning people and your handyman hold the key to the success, right? Because if someone shows up and it's dirty or not right or whatever, you've ruined your reputation. And what they open the door and they're like, wow, you know, bad. Yeah. So how do you find those people? And do you have backups? How do you communicate? Do you pay them in gold bricks? Like, how do you keep good people, you know?
How do you keep them? You treat them well and you pay them what they're worth, first of all. How we found them is just, I mean, you know how real estate is a relationship business. Mm. I've flipped a couple homes and I had a handyman and his wife needed work. So I added her to our rotation. We have like a instruction manual. So we have standard operating procedures for everything we do.
Wow. A business with an actual manual about how they do things.
Yeah,
that must be the engineer mind and the legal mind saying we got to put things in writing, right?
Yeah, because you don't want to have to tell somebody every time, you know, check the toilet paper, check the light bulbs, check the utensils, you know, are all of the measuring cups there, you know, all that good stuff that we want to make sure our guests get a 5-star experience, you know, but for a 2-star price. So we had to put that in writing. And our cleaning people, it's just been through trial and error. We have had some mistakes where somebody's come into a unit and they were not happy and we had to rectify that. But that goes back to making sure your processes are up to date. Now I have a excellent cleaning person. She's outstanding. If she can't make it, she'll, you know, bring one of her friends, one. If not, we have two other backups. We communicate via text.
Do they send you pictures? Like, do they send you little videos or pictures of the before and after of what they were there to see? Because you're not going to go to every property and supervise the cleaning. So how do they show you that it's up to snuff or whatever?
The main cleaner, she will show pictures if something is wrong. She'll send them to Al, and then Al will come fix them. For example, our last unit, I believe we were out of like toilet paper and like some hand soap and things like we keep in stock. So we have like a stock room of things where we store replacement items. So she will send a picture of things that aren't there anymore. But for her, she knows what we do. Like she knows how to wash the linens, like where the washing machines are. So for her, it's not necessary. But for our backups, for sure, they need to send us pictures. And if Al is particularly worried, he will show up before the tenant arrives and greet them. And
just to double check.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because a tenant turnover, if it's, you know, you're only doing one a month, it's not a big deal. And for him, he likes to meet them. Like, he's just a warm guy.
So does he go meet the tenants when they move in or?
Sometimes he fills them out because some people, let's say they're living in California for the first time ever. You know, he'll stop by and say, hey, this is the neighborhood. These are places that you can go to eat. This is, you know, if you wanted to go to the movies, you know, when we had a different world and do things like that.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever thought of doing this in condos, like in golf communities or, you know, have you ever thought of doing that? Or are you focused on the close to the downtown where the work is or next to the hospital? I mean, have you thought about doing the more luxury, I don't want to say luxury, but, you know, the more resort feel for the executives? Or
I've thought about it. Sacramento's unique in the sense that like the high-end market is very limited here. And with the explosion of, I mean, healthcare is a big industry in Sacramento, and it's interesting that a lot of the hospitals are on the outskirts, not even in downtown, right? So those generally are cheaper areas. So it kind of depends. Like, there's certain areas that I wouldn't think would be a hotbed for people that need, you know, EMTs, for example. I'm thinking if we had an EMT for like a year, I wouldn't have thought that where they needed to be is out in Citrus Heights area, because that's about 20 minutes from downtown. But that unit in particular is never vacant, right? So I've thought about the higher end stuff, but I think for Sacramento, we're just not there yet as a city. It's definitely not a low end city. Like, those days are long gone, but the high end is just not there yet for our audience.
Yeah, and the hospitals are way out there, probably because that's where the land was when they were building, right? If they were built in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Sacramento is a very old town, right?
Definitely, it's an old town. Like, Kaiser's has a major imprint now. They have their quote-unquote second headquarters downtown, but they have a major hospital in Elk Grove, which is about 30 minutes from downtown. So there's a lot of need there. There's also hospitals in Roseville area. Roseville is a very affluent area. So halfway between Sacramento and Roseville is that Citrus Heights I was talking about. And, you know, people that work for the hospital, they want that in between, right? Because they can go to work easy, but when Friday and Saturday come, you know, they're going downtown.
Right, right. Oh, that's really interesting. Well, that's cool. Okay. So I guess that's all I have. And everybody who's on the call, if you want to just type your questions in the chat box, I'll be, you know, watching that as well. So, so tell us about Sacramento, investment opportunities. What, I mean, as a realtor and you've been, how long have you been working there? You grew up there? I can't remember if you grew up there or not.
No, actually I'm from the city of Pomona. I'm from Southern California. So
oh, okay.
I moved to Sacramento, I want to say in 2012.
Okay.
And how I learned about Sacramento is because I wanted to buy a duplex. I wanted to get into real estate investing. I just graduated law school and I just started driving around neighborhoods to get a feel like, what is this place like versus that? And, you know, doing that month after month, you learn pretty quickly about what Sacramento is like. And back then, things were a lot cheaper. Looking back, I wish I just would have allocated every dollar I had to real estate.
Yeah.
There's still opportunities. It just depends on where you are and what you're looking for.
Mm.
You know, as an investor, like, are you looking for single family homes? Just buying off the MLS is probably not going to cash flow for you, but you can find homes that need an addition, right?
Mm. If
you're looking in East Sacramento, which is one of the nicest neighborhoods in Sacramento. Doctors, lawyers, lobbyists live there. The type of deal that
doctors, lawyers, and lobbyists. That was funny.
Sacramento, there's so many lobbyists.
But they're up there in income apparently since you bulked them into that grouping.
Oh yeah. Oh,
their PhD in schmoozing does well for them.
Oh yeah. Big companies, they got a lobby in Sacramento.
Yeah.
But yeah, in East Sacramento, what we find is you buy a home that was built in the 20s, 30s that, on a large lot, but it's only one bathroom, right? You pop the top, you add a second story to it. Now you've got a $1 million home and you've got something that is worthwhile for an investor.
Awesome. So in the different neighborhoods, where would you say is the most affordable neighborhood maybe that an investor could buy a more affordable home and rent it out? What would that kind of neighborhood be? The 20-minute away neighborhoods or?
You can still find places it's the zip code 95822. It's technically like Southland Park, but within Southland Park, there's smaller neighborhoods like Freeport Manor, Greenhaven. And you can find homes. I bought a 3-2 for 260, right? Super affordable. It's like a B-minus neighborhood. This is working class. We'll rent for $2,000.
Okay, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but a lot of the homes in the neighborhood are 2-1s or 3-1s. You go further south in that zip code, you can find 3-2s for in the 250s, even 225s that need work.
Okay.
You put in 25,000, you can see some cash flow on it. There's not, vacancies are really low in Sacramento. So if you provide a product that you don't have to have the nicest of everything, but if it's a good, clean product, you're going to have a tenant and they're not going to leave.
Right. Interesting. And so what neighborhoods would have, like, say the small plexes, you know, duplexes, triplex, fourplex, the smaller units, is that in a certain neighborhood or typically it is, right?
Yeah. It's funny in Sacramento City, because there's Sacramento City and there's Sacramento County. In Sacramento City, generally the zoning code permits a duplex on a corner, any corner. So the first duplex I purchased, right, is on a corner. So it looks like two different homes.
Got it. Right?
So you'll find in Sacramento City proper, a lot of duplexes like that in good neighborhoods where there's good schools. So for example, that duplex I bought was $400,000 back in 2014. And I sold it a year and a half ago for $550,000.
Okay. Right? So that's not bad growth, right?
It's not bad growth. And even for the person that bought it for $550, both sides were rented out for $1,800 a month, right?
Oh, that's pretty good for California, right?
Exactly. And that was a Bay Area buyer. He was 1031-ing from his property there. So he had some equity, dropped it in this property. So it was a win-win. So there are a ton of opportunities for duplexes like that, even up to fourplexes. When you get to the grid, there's a lot more fourplexes. Generally, they're going to be smaller units for like the younger professional. There's not too much parting, especially right now. But you can find some deals, four units and under downtown, but expect to pay a minimum of $700 up to $1.2.
Okay. Okay. But the rents are pretty robust anyway, right? And have you seen people do Airbnbs or even your business model in these plexes? Because I don't think people would mind if you were the house in the front, there's another house in the back. That's certainly better than an apartment building, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. With the fourplexes, I see it all the time. My brother-in-law lives in San Francisco, so a couple of his friends, they got an Airbnb downtown on the grid before. Mm-hmm. And people do them really nice. Like they upgrade it to the max because it's walkable downtown or you know, jump bikes, things like that. You see that pretty often and you can make a lot of money. I have a mortgage lender friend in East Sacramento, that nice neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Houses are more expensive, but he runs an Airbnb and he was telling me he gets between $5,000 and $6,000 a month. Right.
Wow. So, in his pocket after his expenses, like after the mortgage and everything?
That's his revenue. I think his mortgage is probably like $2,500 and expenses are what they are.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're local, you could probably run it, right? If we're down here in Southern California, it's going to be a little harder. Well, you have to build a team if you're going to do that. But it seems to me that would be the thing to do with some plexes downtown is do the Airbnb thing or short-term rental.
Definitely, because Sacramento allows it. Obviously, there's an ordinance that governs it. You just have to pay your taxes and you register the units,
right,
and you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. And are you seeing a lot of back to your, I guess this is kind of in between, but are you seeing a lot of ADUs being built in your different neighborhoods?
That is interesting. I'm seeing more when a homeowner is putting a property on the market, I'm seeing more properties where they've added an ADU or converted a garage. I haven't seen a lot of ADUs where it's been added otherwise, right? Like it's somebody's.
So people are adding it just to add some icing on the cake to sell it.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. Because Sacramento's an older town, so you'll see homes like in the Land Park area, which is one of the best neighborhoods. These houses are older, but they're usually on large lots. So you can add the ADU or convert something into an ADU without having to do a complete $100,000 rehab to that inside of the home and still add value.
Uh-huh. And if they convert their garage, do you know, do they have to build another garage or they're allowed to lose the garage? It's okay to just lose it. Interesting. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. Wow. Okay. And so if someone's interested in more of the multifamily, like bigger apartment buildings, I remember I almost bought an apartment building up there. Talk about 2014, it was probably 2012, 2014. And it was like 800,000 for a lot of units, you know, but I didn't know Sacramento and it looked like a scary neighborhood. So I should have gone up there, but you know, I didn't, you know, for some reason we don't take action. I think it's when we don't know, we don't take action, right? So, so is in your opinion, what's the ABC kind of price range cap rates for your multifamilies?
So if you're getting over four units, you're in the multifamily space. Mm-hmm. The grid has a lot of apartments and in some parts, like I'm thinking of the northern part of the grid, you know, above C Street between like 16 and 30th. It's a really nice area, Boulevard Park. It's a lot of big trees. That's what I love about Sacramento.
Yeah.
You'll find a lot of apartment buildings interspersed with homes, and those are going to run you at least 1.4 up to, you know, 2.5 million. But you're going to get something that is always going to have tenants, right? Moving outside of like that particular area, I'm thinking the Oak Park neighborhood. I've seen multifamilies, small multifamilies in the $1.6 to $2 million range. Definitely going to need a little work. But you can find those kind of apartment deals. And, I was talking to a broker friend in LA and, you know, he's like, it's a minimum $3 million of what, you know, to talk to me of what you're going to have to spend to buy something. Coming to Sacramento, looking at 1.5, it's a big difference.
So how many units or price per door to give people an idea of like how many units would be in a $1.5 million building?
I would say between 8 and 12, depending on the location.
Okay, so the smaller apartment buildings.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what you're going to find in the grid. Moving outside, like to Sacramento County, is when you'll find a lot of larger ones. And what I'm seeing is those are going to institutional investors who have been pretty, you know, aggressive.
Have the bucks, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how are your cap rates on those? Are you guys
really
at the four and a half, you know?
Yeah.
Trying really to reach low. For four.
Exactly.
So if someone was more of a
deal.
Yeah. So if someone was more of a value add, are there a lot of opportunities for kind of the buildings that are more beat up that need fixing, or is that just not?
There's some opportunity. I think you're going to have to take a little bit of risk about being in an area that's in transition.
Uh-huh.
So Sacramento is very neighborhoody. So you can just cross a major street and the neighborhood will be named something different and the values will be very different.
Mm.
Does that mean it's appreciably a worse place to live? No. But you do have to be careful about that because you can think you're on, you know, the cusp. I'm thinking of this neighborhood, Curtis Park, and right across a major street, Franklin Boulevard, it's not Curtis Park anymore. But people will see that a house is ridiculously cheaper across the street and think, oh, I'm getting a deal. Well, you're getting a deal because it's not in that
on the wrong side of the street. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But
and like the duplex I mentioned for 259, right? If it looks too good to be true, probably it is, right? It's possible that you found a screaming deal that nobody else saw, but probably it is what it is, right? So
it is what it is. Yeah. I've done a lot of direct marketing in Sacramento. So people here generally know what the properties are worth and they're not going to sell it for too much below, you know, what market value is unless, you know, there's an extenuating circumstance. But I definitely think for the value add, there's still deals, especially in the downtown area, because I'm pretty bullish on downtown. We got the new stadium. There's a new hotel going in right adjacent to the stadium. The city and developers have poured in a ton of money on the corridor right there, K Street. So it's continuing to evolve into a modern city.
Mm.
And you can find houses, you know, maybe 7, 8, 10 blocks down that need to be rehabbed. And mm-hmm. I can see in 5, 10 years, it's going to be very desirable.
Mm-hmm. So when you mentioned marketing, investors should be marketing and obviously realtors should be marketing for business. So do you do postcards? Do you call people? How do you do your marketing for your real estate side?
I'm old school. I like to cold call.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't like cold calling. It's a grind, but to me, you get the best deals. You get the best leads for the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't cost me much to get a dialer, to call people, to talk to them and to follow up with them.
Mm-hmm. So are you doing an auto dialer where they respond to you? Or are you actually taking your phone and dialing someone's number and seeing if they pick up?
It's an auto dialer online, Mojo, you know, the Mojo dialer agents use all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will, if somebody picks up the phone, I will actually talk to them. I will put them in my CRM. I will follow up with them, whether
mm-hmm.
it's email, however, sometimes a letter of follow up. But I think, I don't know, because real estate is relational. You got to mm-hmm. talk to people.
Yeah. So you don't do the postcard thing. Do you door knock to find people or?
I haven't door knocked, but I just, if I see somebody, for example, I was walking the dog the other day, you see somebody fixing up a house and just strike up a conversation.
Right.
It may not even be about that property. It may be about, oh, this person is fixing up something else somewhere else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I don't door knock. I don't do the mailers. I just have never gotten into the mailers. Maybe that's just a fault of mine, but mm-hmm. I do like talking to people. So.
Yeah. Well, mailers for a while were great. And then people got so much mail that my husband laughs at me. I stand over the garbage and go, psh, 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 you know, oh, that looks like, you know, so I'm sure other people do that too. It's just, we get bombarded with messages and they all look alike. Right. So whereas your voice is going to impart something that the written word's never going to do. So,
yeah,
so that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I neglected to mention, I do a monthly email newsletter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like something I got from my mom because I don't live near my mom anymore. So she's like, I want to hear about what's going on in your life. So,
so what do? You send a letter to everybody.
Exactly.
Well, that's a way to be efficient, right? Scale your time, make sure that you're using your time in the best way possible.
Exactly.
It's and your mom's happy. So
yeah. You show your personality a little bit.
That's hilarious. So tell me more about the next thing we were going to talk about is kind of like the development that's going on in Sacramento. It seems, I always thought it was a government town. So I'm glad to hear that it's a hospital town or medical town, because that's, you know, that's more fluid. Like government to me is a little like a stuck thing. It is what it is. It's going to be the same over and over, but medical people change, you know. I mean, it's just more fluid and exciting, I guess, to attract the younger crowds, right?
Definitely. I have seen the evolution, because to an extent, you are right. Sacramento, its baseline, is a government town. If you go downtown, there are some of the prime locations are government buildings. And that's always going to be here. But, you know, with Kaiser,
and walking around, you see a lot of suits, right?
Yeah, at the Capitol, all the lobbies.
Like weird.
Totally. It's the only city. Like, you go to San Francisco, nobody wears a suit, but I digress. there has been a lot of development. And what's interesting is that there's still been space on the grid. There's one large development being done by a local developer, female developer. It's the Mill on Broadway. It's a ginormous development. It's reasonably affordable. You could find property all the way down from $400,000 to $700,000, right? And that's in the heart of Sacramento. There's the high-end stuff in East Sacramento. But then if you go to West Sacramento, which is in another county, it's not Sacramento at all. It's a different city in a different county. And you can find like your suburban type homes with the good school districts, anywhere from 500 all the way up to a million. So there's a lot of options for people who want new builds.
Those are high prices for being on an outskirt town, right?
Well, West Sacramento is... I mean, it's a 10-minute drive to downtown, so it's not
it's
far at all.
Right, right.
It's really close. If you're going to a suburb where we're talking Elk Grove, which is a 30-minute commute, I lived there when I first moved up here. Yeah, you can find everything from $400,000 all the way up to a million. You know, you can find some really cheap homes, but then you got to deal with a little bit of a commute to get downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of options for new builds.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So there's big buildings going in, like this developer, the Mill on Broadway you were talking about, and then the suburbs. So is anyone building like affordable housing? Is anyone attacking that?
I wish.
And where's the empty land? Because I'm just fascinated about why can't we build affordable housing? I get that some builders don't think it's worth it and what, there's all kinds of reasons, but are there plots of empty land that you could say, yeah, that's a spot where you could have affordable housing?
There are spots, definitely. I'm thinking of where the Sacramento Kings used to play, Arco Arena. Adjacent to there is a number of development that was built specifically to house, you know, people that would want to be around there. But now... Mm-hmm. The Kings don't play in Arco anymore. It's just a huge space. That could be prime real estate. There's areas in Natomas, which is northern Sacramento. Tons of new homes being built up there, but none of it is affordable housing. I just think with the cost of the land, the cost of the entitlement process, developers just, they're not going to make their 20%. And they don't want to undertake that. And that's the reality we're seeing throughout California, not just in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the governor talked about having like, well, before the whole COVID thing, he talked about buying like trailers and putting them on empty land. And, you know, like years ago, we thought, oh, containers, you know, there was a movement using these containers, that shipping containers, and converting them into housing, right?
Yeah.
And the tiny home movement, right? Whatever, you don't even hear about those guys anymore. So I'm just wondering if there's, you know, something like that that can be done.
I've seen the container building. So there's a container commercial building downtown on 14th and N Street. And it's a high-rise building built out of containers. Like there's a Jimmy John's downstairs and a taco spot. And then upstairs is residential. But that's really the only one I've seen like that, now that you mention it. Yeah, affordable housing, it's tricky because I've had people accuse me and my business partner of being part of the problem in Sacramento because we've seen rents, you know, go up so quickly. They're like, well, maybe if you didn't have your units for your purpose, that would help drive down prices. You know, but I'm like, I'm still meeting a demand that's there regardless. These people need housing for what they need. And my little 13 units are not impacting, you know, the larger problem with we don't have enough affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think your 13 units are crashing the system, but, you know, I could be.
Right.
So let's see. So, Tom says, if you build any price homes, it'll free up the homes at the lower end. It's just supply and demand. Yeah. Yeah. We need more supply of the littler homes, though, I think.
We definitely need more supply in general, because as families get older, they're going to want to grow into a larger home, which then frees up the lower end. I think that's what Tom is getting at. And I agree wholeheartedly.
Okay, great. I don't see any other questions. So one thing that's been happening is people are moving on homes. And so I don't know if you have a lot of empty lots. Again, with the development thing, is maybe, you know, prefab homes, is that a thing in Sacramento? Are people doing that, you know, where you buy not a mobile home, but a home that's fabricated in the manufacturing plant or in the, you know, offsite, and then the walls are moved over and assembled and all that onto the lot? Do you see any of that going on there, or?
A little bit, not a ton of it. I think when Sacramento, what you see a lot of is, I mean, there may not be a ton of empty lots. They're generally, you'll find some and you'll be surprised, like in downtown, why is there an empty lot? But there's a lot of underutilization of land where you'll have a home that is a 2-1 that's, you know, 1,000, 1,100 square feet on like 6,000 square foot lot, 7,000 square foot lot. So there's opportunities there for density. And as our legislature has passed laws to allow for more density without local, you know, discretion, I think that's where things have to move, is allowing, maybe forcing, you know, cities to have more density, and that can help alleviate the problem.
That makes sense. Okay, good. Well, that was all my questions for today. So if you were to advise someone on buying in Sacramento, or just as an investor, what would you give a new investor as kind of advice on what to do? Because it sounds like you bought the duplex. I mean, you kind of did what we recommend people do, is first buy a plex of some kind, move in, live there, the, you know, we'll call it mandatory 1 year that you signed loan documents saying you would. And then, so buy a fourplex, buy a duplex, then buy a house or a condo to live in for yourself, right? So it sounds like you kind of followed that pattern of let me buy and move and buy. Yeah. And so that's awesome. Exactly. And it appears that you did it fairly young in life. So what would you recommend a new investor do? And what would you do differently, I guess, if you had to do it over again?
Well, thank you for those kind words. What I would advise an investor is to, one, pick something, pick what you want to do. If you want to invest in a single family home, there's nothing wrong with that, but stick with that and own that, learn that, learn where you can find value, learn how you can buy and add value. Right. Secondly, I would say act now rather than later, because you're going to make mistakes, and the one or two mistakes you make in the beginning, it's not going to be a big deal. I've made mistakes, and my wife and I, well, my wife mostly does not let me forget it, but we can laugh about it now.
Good that she reminds you.
Right? But we
laugh. Keeps you real.
It does. And we see, like, oh, remember when we did this? And now that we've learned, and we don't do that anymore. So I would say, don't be afraid to start, because you're going to make mistakes regardless. And in Sacramento specifically, I would say if you're out of town, either get somebody on your team who's going to send you videos or give you like some good data and visuals, so you can really understand the neighborhoods and the areas that you're interested in. Because I love Sacramento. I'm born and raised in Southern California, but Sacramento has a certain charm about it. And unless you experience it, you may not understand why people are moving here and why I think it will continue to appreciate.
And where do you see the employment growth in Sacramento?
Good question. We've seen a growth in small businesses, definitely the construction, healthcare. As a baseline, the state is always there. I found, I've spoken to some employers about this, that it's hard to compete with the state because they offer a certain baseline of pay that, you know, and benefits that once people have a family, people
they want migrate. That.
Yeah. But healthcare specifically, UC Davis Med Center is, they're doing something called Aggie Square in the Oak Park
Aggie Square?
Yeah, because it's UC Davis Aggies.
Okay.
So they're going to take a large development part in Oak Park and just blow up what they've been doing there. So that's why I say construction, health, education, and the state government is always at a baseline.
Awesome. So if someone wanted to get in touch with you to talk about, you know, investing in Sacramento, or maybe they want just some advice or what have you, how would they get a hold of you? What's the best way to get a hold of you, I guess?
You can Google me, because there's only one Embert, E-M-B-E-R-T. But you can find me on LinkedIn, Embert Madison. You can find me on Bigger Pockets. If you Google my name, my email shows up.
Great.
I'm available.
You're pretty much out there, huh?
Yeah, Instagram, I get a lot of DMs. You know, there's only one Embert, so.
Yeah, easy. That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us today and being so generous with your time, and your advice is just so spot on as to focus. I think people are, you know, they have the shiny object syndrome of just like, oh, tax liens, oh, this, oh, yeah. And they're just like, and then they end up nowhere, right?
Yeah.
Because they're just.
Everything can work if you focus.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you so much for that. And thanks for joining us. And hopefully we'll hear from you soon again.
Yeah, definitely.
And have a great weekend.
You too. Good to see
you. Okay. Bye.
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 This has been another episode of My Cashflow Academy's Investor's Corner with your host, Athena Paquette Cornier. We wish you all the success you deserve as you use what you've learned here out in the real world. Check out the blog post for this episode, along with many more helpful resources at mycashflowacademy.com.